How can brands and agencies improve their collaborations with influencers and content creators? Vijay Vijendranath, who goes by Vijay V, is a seasoned content creator, influencer, and platform owner. He thinks brands and agencies should encourage authenticity and collaboration more than scripting content creators. We talk about some of the realities of leaving a corporate job to build your creative pursuits.
If you can focus on your community building, you can defeat, quote unquote, defeat the algorithm and just focus on the community. Or you can work towards using the algorithm to your advantage and by being consistent with the content that you create.
As an influencer and content creator, how do you partner with brands? And as a brand, how do you collaborate successfully with content creators?
So in content creation, you got to have social proof. So for about a few years, there was no revenue for a few years prior to making the move into full-time business. We were creating content as a side hustle on the side, building it for roughly 2.5 years.
Keep listening for Vijay's perspective. This is The Lead Creative.
Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe.
To kick things off, Vijay, when we first met, you were working at Ericsson. You had just started your photography business, and you've now since moved on from Ericsson, resigning from Ericsson and treating photography, which was your side gig, as now your main thing, including, of course, content creation, which we'll talk about as we go. How do you make that leap, or what led to the decision of making that leap? Was it the size of clients that you were getting? Was it because it was just time for you to make the leap?
I've been doing photography as a side hustle on weekends for a few years before that, before I resigned from Ericsson. I've been doing side hustles in that sense because I enjoyed it. I was finding a lot of happiness. I found out that I actually loved the creative side, something that I ignored for a long time. So as I was doing it, the reason that I took the leap is that corporate life, now other people were fine, but I was getting disconnected in that environment, mentally speaking, very disconnected. It didn't feel like this was my thing. So until it hit me in the face, and I was literally depressed. Like, this says something wrong here. I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing. My instinct, my intuition is telling me that my future does not exist in this kind of career. Not necessarily, you know, Ericsson or any other company. All these companies are just, you know, they do what they do. It was my environment it's my experience that was not great. Then I realized, okay, this is not working out. And I took the leap. I took the courage, even though I wasn't quite ready financially, spiritually, mentally, in any way. I did it because if I don't, it never happens. You're never going to be ready. So I just took the leap.
Yeah. So many people that I follow and many people that content creators in general follow make it sound easy, right? You watch YouTube videos and someone says exactly what you've just said. It was time for me. I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready financially. But of course, if you've got a family, a home, and responsibilities, it's not that easy, right? It's made to sound easy. What were some of your challenges in making that move and making that leap?
Okay, the challenges, other than the financial side, okay, was obviously because I worked in corporate for like few years, I was able to save up, have a backup. I mean, my wife also does work as well. We managed to sort of make things work. I delayed whatever purchases we needed to make, whatever commitments that was required. Only thing I needed to do was ensure that the house was paid, we could eat, the kids could go to school, and I could work on my business. That was the only priority that I had. And I needed people to help me as well. I had to borrow money as well, so that when I couldn't make my house payments, when I couldn't make car payments, those things happen. You know, whatever people tell you, hey, you know, I did it nicely and I worked hard. They're lying to you. They had rich daddies. They've had a trust fund. I mean, you know, you name it. They had all kinds of things.
Yeah, there was some sort of backup that existed. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they're all lying to you. They had major backups and then they just shot up. Mine, I really, really had to work. I had to use my savings. I had to borrow money. I also had to take loans, keep the basics going, ensure the only priority I had was if I was going to do this properly, if I was going to pursue this, I needed to make sure my kids were okay, that they will not suffer based on these consequences, that they would not end up falling out of school because I couldn't make payments. That's the only check I did. And when that check balanced, I made the move.
Okay. I think I'm more comfortable, I think, hearing it that way. I think hearing the realities of it rather than I made the big leap. And then, of course, you then developed from photography onto more serious content creation, and you started building a lot of, I think, your own content and a business behind the content creation. I think the first one was You, Baby, and I that became big and started partnering and collaborating with brands. That's when you started collaborating with brands. In terms of starting those relationships with brands, how did it happen for you? Did you go through agencies first, or did you go directly through some of the brands? Because you've now worked with many brands. One of them that you worked with in recent times was Disney, right? So how did you make that leap, or what was the first step to getting those collaborations?
Okay, so in the content creation world, as you know better than anyone, you got to create the content first that you like, that speaks to you. And then with that, you then take it to the brands and say, this is what we do. Does this align with your values? Let's collaborate. I could not have collaborated with Disney or anyone by simply going there saying, hey, I'm looking to do a hobby. Can you help me? You know, they will say, show us some proof. So in content creation, you got to have social proof. So for about a few years, there was no revenue for a few years prior to making the move into full-time business. We were creating content as a side hustle on the side, building it for roughly 2.5 years, creating content, weekend time, weekend after weekend, taking pictures, writing about our experiences, what it's like with our kids, using product A, using product B, what's it like with other moms and dads and kids. Then once we started having traction, once we hit at least, I would say 10K users a month kind of traffic, we then took it to the brands and say, this is what we do. This is our content. This is our values. We believe that we align. Can we do something sponsored with you? And it begins with buying Disney products first. You got to buy the products. Go use it yourself. Show it to Disney. This is how we do reviews. Then the next step is they might give you more products to try. You give it back. Next time you build a relationship, you get to keep the products. Then it becomes yours because now you build that relationship. Afterwards, you build enough clout, they start to pay you to do the reviews, or they'll pay you to test it out with the network of people that you've built. And that's the gradual increase that happens.
Yeah. Now, in all of this, I think you of course started with building the content and creating the content and generating the sort of the following and the interaction and the community, as it were.
Yeah.
How then as a content creator do you remain authentic? How do you remain true to the very community that put you up there? And by that I mean, when there's, you know, if you buy a product to review it, it's different from when someone says, hey, here's 10,000 rands, here's $2,000, go review this product. And if you don't like it, what happens? If you like it, Of course, you write a positive review. If you don't like it, do you go back to the brand or do you tell your community that, hey, that product I was unboxing last week didn't turn out to be as good as I thought it would be?
It's a slippery slope. We know this because I've seen it when content creators are on the other end who are bigger than us doing it, and we could see it was fake, right? We could see that they were just being paid to say these things. So I know it can leave a bad taste in your mouth. What you have to do is, and these rules were obviously updated later on, but in earlier stages, people would do it, get paid, and get reviewed, and you wouldn't know. But obviously, you saw the updates in social media where you were forced to mention that you are being sponsored to say it. You have a paid partnership with the company to do it. You have to disclose it. That's the only way to do it. Disclose it. Mention that it's an ad. Mention that you've been either paid to do it, it's a product exchange of some sort, or some agreement that you've come up with the company to do it. Okay, that's the first thing, disclose. Second one, if the products don't work out, what we do is in two phases. We would go back privately to the brand and say, you sent us this product to review. Mm. We have this agreement, but guys, this product doesn't work like you think it does. We have an issue. They would go back to the drawing board and say, maybe it's a different product. Maybe they can give us something else. Or they might just take it back and say, just leave it. Don't publish it. I don't think it's a good idea. But they can sometimes say, you know what, just publish it anyway. Because we believe that we are improving our relationship with our customers doing it this way. They would then review what we tell them, because we do that. Some people don't, but we do. We would actually give it to them and say, this is what we're going to say about your product. These are the pros and cons.
Yeah.
Are you okay with this? Let's go public. So those are the relationships that we build. At least get their permission. If it's an issue, give it back. If not, publish. And that's how it is. I mean, we are not a controversial review. I mean, we are not doing reviews like some of these guys that go really, really critical. You know, we are doing it as a community building. It's a little fancy. We're having fun with family. You know, it's not too serious. So in our case, not so bad, you know.
So in you've got the, I've mentioned You Baby and I, you've got that, you've got VJV as well. And I know that you also love doing some travel content as well, because you also love to have those experiences. In some instances, in some corners, at least working on the agency side of things and having worked with content creators and being a content creator myself, there's the school of thought that goes, if a person loves technology stuff or they're a technology influencer or a technology reviewer, they are more trusted by their community on issues of technology, right? So you've got the parenting stuff, you've got the travel, and you've got the podcast as well as your photography. How do you strike the balance in that, in being a credible voice in any of these platforms or any of these types of communications that you put out there as a content creator?
There's another main one, Mom Says as well, which is actually the biggest one that we have now, which is an offshoot.
Yes, and I want to talk about Mom Says, because Mom Says to me is different from You Baby and I, where you were creating the content as a team and as, call it a family. And now you've created, out of the learnings of You Baby and I, you've now created a platform that is Mom Says. So I want to talk about that. But before we get to that, I'd like to just get a sense of how you strike this balance and being a credible voice with the community that you've built.
Yeah. The credibility is because it's parenting, it's family reviews. I'm a family guy. You know, I have kids. We do this naturally. Whether or not I do reviews, we would do it anyway. There are products, whether we review it or not, whether we buy it or not, it's something we would use anyway. That's where credibility is. You review products, work with them, use them, display them, show them, whatever you want to do that you would already use given the chance.
Yeah.
I mean, prams, the car seat, these are things you're going to need for your children when they were babies. Then there's clothes that you got to put on your kids. You've got toys that you've got to buy for your kids for Christmas. There's products that they need. There's also things like the food that they eat that the kids prefer. That's normal stuff. So we just take that and then we simply put it out in the open and say, this is what literally happened. And in fact, you, baby, and I, as it was growing normally, I mean, it was like pretty natural, but it really took off, I would say, about a year and a half into it when my wife put the post up, where we went through a lot of things that happened and we realized there are products that you should get as a first-time parent. And then she released this post, 100 products first-time parents must buy. And then she put everything that we actually used. Not recommendations or research from papers and what other people said.
Other platforms and tools.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just what we used. And we put it up. And that actually what grew You Baby and I. That was like the viral post, so to speak, that really got us on the map.
So what I'm getting then is that your style, or at least your flavor of content creation, is this balance between life and lifestyle as well as interest. It's not something that you have to go out of your, completely out of your comfort zone and out of who you are to release and create that kind of content. Unlike, I'm guessing, someone who receives a different product every week. So this week you receive champagne, next week you receive a car, the following week you receive a mic, the next week you receive a camera, things that may or may not be within your frame of reference, or at least your lifestyle. Now, I guess the next question would be, do you then reject some brands and products because they don't fit into that image?
And that also answers the travel question that you asked. Why are we traveling? It's because it's something we already do. I'm taking photography, right? Something we already do. So this is where credibility does happen. Once we reached certain point, do you know, we had a time where PR agencies and companies drop products at our door and they don't tell us that we would get random deliveries of new foods, new clothing, or some interesting thing that's been released into the public, and it's completely unknown. They don't even tell us it's coming. It's simply dropped at your door. And I'm thinking, wait, did someone order something? No. Okay, what is this? We open it up. What? Is this a new jar of jam? You know, or there's some new flavor of biscuits that's been released, and we get that, or clothing or something interesting. And then it got to a point where we were getting so many that we were running out of space in the house to keep them. So it gets to that point as well. And we actually didn't reject them because we wanted to be professional in what we do. We wanted to, you know, build relationships. So what we do is that we would have the box, we would analyze it, we would email them and say, what is it that you sent us? Like, you know, there's sometimes their contact details are there, the PR agency, or it could be the company directly that sent it to you, like a small business. What would you like us to do? What are your expectations? Is this simply, and very often they are nice and professional and say, nope, you don't want anything. We just want you to try it. If you like it, say something. If not, it's fine. But sometimes there are agencies that will hound you and say, why didn't you review our product? Why didn't you do this? Mm. Why didn't you do that? After they sent it and not tell us about it. Something that were also not as relevant to us. I mean, our kids sometimes, in fact, they were sent products thinking that we had babies, but our kids had grown up already. They were already 3-4 years old. And they sent something for newborn babies. And I said, guys, we can't use this. Our kids are no longer newborns. What do we do with this now?
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
Now, there are a couple of things in that might be, I guess, that might be some good information for brands and agencies. I'm sure agencies don't do that as much anymore because, of course, that's a kind of, I suppose, some sort of guerrilla marketing that comes with being an influencer, or at least giving influencers or people who are within that space unsolicited products.
Yeah.
The there are some dangers in that. The one is that you don't know what's in that box, firstly. And the other is of course, the fact that if a brand does that, there's also the possibility of backlash, getting that kind of backlash from the people that you're sending these products. What's your, I guess, advice or word of warning or caution to brands who do that? Should they be doing that? How do you receive that, basically? Let me probably ask it that way. How do you take to brands doing that?
Doing that is actually the most affordable way for brands to reach. That's why they do it. It is actually cheaper to do that than to set up fancy events that are expensive, where you could invite people, invite influencers, have a host, an MC, and do catering, and then they need a PR agency to send out information. It is so formalized. This one, as you called it very rightly, guerrilla marketing. So where you send it to people that you think that might need it, and it's sometimes useful, sometimes there is a lot of backlash, especially when the products are irrelevant and they have expectations for you to do something with it without telling us what they want from it. Brands can actually use this quite effectively. It works very well, but you've got to understand your audience. Send the products that are relevant.
Yeah.
Send a relevant product. You know that this is a couple that's into fitness and their kids are also into fitness. They travel a lot. Then send them something related to it. Understand how old the kids are or what stage of life they're in. Or at least do some research. Check with the bloggers and the influencers how old the kids are, if you're going to send something for the kids. You know? Or inform before you send it, may we send this to you? We would like you to try this out. And I believe that you have two children. They are 5 years and 7 years old. We believe that these are relevant to your children. You can then respond and say, hey, our kids are actually 10 and 15 now. You know, they're actually too old for this. But being a good influencer, someone who's professional, can say, we can help you find an influencer or someone within our network that is actually relevant for you. Maybe we can help you, and then they can respond based on that, so that we can refer for them who is relevant that they can work with. But very often they would say, right. What if... Oh yes, carry on.
You then built, as you mentioned earlier, another platform, which is Mom Says, of course, from the learnings of you, baby, and I, and everything else that you had done prior to that. What's your thinking behind creating this kind of platform versus something that was a blog that you ran yourself, where you now create a space for other people to collaborate with you? What was the thinking behind that, and why did you do it that way?
Exactly from the previous question that you asked me. What do I do with all these products that are coming to you? What if they're not relevant? You won't have time to do it. You might not be getting paid to do it, and they have expectations for you to do something with it. So we created Mom Says to create a network of moms who are going through a journey. And I said, what if we can use our network and send it and refer it to another mom, another parent, child, etc., that are relevant through us? So we would receive products, or we would receive some sort of contract and say, you need to do this review or something. And we can go through our network of moms and say, oh, this mom that lives here has children who needs this product right now. Right? She is a micro-influencer. She's starting a career. She would actually be the most relevant person for you. The age matches the product. We will help you send it. So in a way, Mom Says is like an agency, in a way, helping brands connect with relevant moms so that the products can be tested effectively. They get what they also want, because by doing it through Mom Says, they will always get something back, meaning they will get a review, they will get some sort of social media posts, they will get some sort of exposure. And then Mom Says uses that platform and leverages their review so that a micro influencer can go on top of Mom Says and actually expand. So it's, even though she might not have good reach, but together with us, she gets good reach. So the brand gets something, we get something, we get exposure, we get, you know, traffic. And the mom who actually wants the stuff, who is dying to have the stuff, who tells us, you know, I would really like to try this. My child just turned one and I want to get him something special. And it could be an affordability yes. problem as well. Mm-hmm. We get those relevant moms say, why don't you then help us? We will send it to you. Send us these reviews. Give us this information. Publish it. We will help. We will help raise awareness for the product. Brand gets something. We get something. They get something. And that's mom says. That's how it began.
Okay, and then you keep throwing around the word the term influencer, and I want to get into that a bit, because having worked with you and having collaborated with you on a number of projects, you always wear the content creator hat when we are working together. But I know that somewhere in the background, there's some influencer work that's happening, right? So how is it, what's the difference for you as a content creator working as a content creator or creating content and being an influencer? How do you make that distinction?
Let me ask it another way. Should you make that distinction? Is that distinction for someone else or is it for myself?
I guess it all depends on the deal, right? On the contract, whether brand X comes to you as a content creator or that brand comes to you only for the influencer side of things, even though within the influencer side of things that there's content to be created. So I guess what's your approach? How do you view it? Do you view yourself as more of an influencer, or do you view yourself as a content creator who happens to also be able to drive, I suppose, behavior, shopping, or whatever it is, to drive an action of some sort?
In the beginning stages, being influencer, so to speak, was the main thing. We would work as a family, do a lot of things. Even the children would be involved, and we would produce them. Sometimes we would say, we can't do this for you because it's not relevant. What if we refer someone to you, refer someone for you, and then we will help create that content together with that mom, a different family, and we will produce it together and give it to you. On 20% of the time, brands would say, no, we sent it to you because we want you to do it, because they're seeing you as an influencer. They want your content, your network, your name behind the content. But that's 20% of the time. 80% of the time is where it's content creation, which is to create the content and put a name behind it only if it's relevant. Meaning, if I'm going to do a camera review, trust me, it will be relevant because I do photography and I've done it for a long time. But if someone said, review a washing machine, well, relevant because parent.
You don't do laundry?
No, I don't. I just drop it in and something magically happens. Funny enough, we did a laundry video for a brand, which actually did quite well because I did my comedy in it, where we had the brand, which had all kinds of nice features. Then I found some old washing machine and I did a video where before, good idea, bad idea. Meaning good idea using this brand, what it's like, bad idea if you try and wash your clothes with that brand, but it's a no-name old thing. So it's like a comedy, like if you wanted to remove Flint, it comes out great, but if you use this one, it turns into a dog, you know? And I actually did that. So I turned on the machine and I opened it and I pulled out a dog. My piece of clothing became an actual animal. So that's a stupid comedy that I did, which actually did quite well on the Mom Says page. But that's the relevancy of content creation. It doesn't have to be through influencer. It's only about 80% of the time. 80% of the time where it's content. 20% of the time is where they're saying, I want you to do it as an influencer, put your name on it and brand on it.
Let's get into the content creation side a bit more, because you do a lot of, I mean, serious stuff when it comes to the content with really good equipment, and you take it seriously, right? You don't use substandard equipment, let me just put it that way, right, to create some of this content. So what should brands consider when looking to collaborate with someone like you, brands or agencies? Because we get budgets and the budget is X, but actually that doesn't even cover the cost for you of your time. So what considerations should there be besides the ones you've just mentioned, that the brand works with you and your lifestyle, that people must do their research first before they approach you? What other considerations should brands or agencies have before approaching a content creator influencer?
Right. Remember when we had the chat in our podcast and I spoke about the triangle, the what, the how, and the why? It's a very simple little pyramid that brands can use to understand what they actually want to do. If they say, I want to influence stories and build something that is valuable to people because I want it to have an emotional connection, you don't necessarily need fancy equipment. Good old stories from the ground, people using their phones, works perfectly. But then you've got to agree that that's the platform that you want to go with. Mobile photography, mobile videos, people on the ground, users, consumers, just recording themselves in and submitting it. If that matches the content that they're looking for, that is okay because they are building a community using that process. However, if they want to do a photography competition and they want to give away a fancy camera, that brand and the agency has to realize that if you want to sell good cameras where your brand is about taking good imagery, the photos that people submit need to be good as well, so that people get inspired and see this is what people are creating with this camera. If you ask them to submit a mobile photo in order to win that camera, I think there's a mismatch, even though it is about photography. Because remember, it's that brand, that camera, that company that owns and makes that camera wants to sell that brand. So they need to actually create content with that particular camera by using a different medium, contacting people who know how to handle such equipment and submit it out there so that people can see, wow, look at the quality of these images with this camera, you know, and it's affordable, assuming it's an affordable kind of fancy camera. You know, that's the kind of content that needs to be done. People need to ask, what is the right medium? What is the message? And what is the platform that is required to actually get the message out so that we connect with the right people, sell the right stuff, sell it the right way, connect with the right people, so that at the end of the day, brand agencies need to ask, are we helping the brand make money, have better reach, and aligning with their values?
Yeah. What's the best way for you to get a product out there or to get product messaging out there? Is the one that's your most preferred, and why that particular platform? Why platform A instead of B, and which one is your, I guess, the one that you most gravitate to?
You know, I was watching a video from Gary Vee. You know Gary Vee. He's very loud and very like out there and really like gets you in the face, okay? But there's something that he said that's very poignant and I thought it was powerful. He said, if you have a community of people that trust what you have to say, you can go on any platform and they will follow you. If TikTok tomorrow shuts down, you can actually take those followers and put them somewhere else. They will find you and they will follow you on that. All of these platforms are trendy. They come and go. Like Facebook, for example, is going through its post. I don't know what is happening there now, but I think it's, you know, starting to die out. It's losing its relevancy. People are using TikTok more often. People just shifted. The people that used to use are now using that. The younger folks are now using TikTok. Platforms will change. What's important is, though, that you use the platform currently that's trending, that is relevant to you. And there are tons that you can use, tons of platforms. The question is whatever that you're producing relevant to that platform, relevant to how that social media platform is going to help you grow? Do you know photography is not quite working well in Instagram because of their shift towards Reels? So it's not helping photographers anymore, but it's helping content creators who are doing video. So the photographers that have adapted to video are doing much better than the photographers who are only posting photos.
Right. So I get that, and I also hear you skirting away from the choosing going to a platform thing, right? Because all of these platforms have their advantages and disadvantages, and at the moment, and I'm not pitting one platform against another, but at the moment, photographers are talking about Vero more than they are about Instagram. I don't know whether that's good or bad or whether that's anything, but there are conversations happening about Vero with photography and also with good quality video as well, right?
Yeah.
Again, it's a new platform that's setting itself up. YouTube still works in some instances for long form content, and TikTok for TikToks. But basically, if a brand approaches somebody like yourself or wants to work with someone like yourself, you would almost, I guess, gravitate towards a platform because of the kind of content that they want, or you would be more comfortable with platform A versus platform B. Like I've seen, for instance, I've seen how you are on Twitter versus how you are on Instagram. I almost never see your images on Twitter, but I see them on Instagram. Whereas another photographer would have some of their photography on Instagram as well as on Twitter, right? Yeah. I see your videos, your long form videos on YouTube only. I don't see them as much on Instagram, as an example, right? So what's your most preferred platform and why?
I think you answered the question. When it comes to certain platforms like Twitter, it's great to have conversations with people, but I see photographers sharing images and they are succeeding as well. So it works in their way because of the audience that they have, not the platform.
Sure.
I have the audience that I have, the kind of people that have like conversations. They comment on certain trends and it's amazing. That photographer who puts pictures, who's having great engagement, is because he has an audience. He's brought his audience along from Instagram to Twitter and back and forth. That's why it's working, which is why I always say your audience will come and they will respect what you're doing if you are consistent with it. So you don't have to do what I do, which is use only news type of stuff on Twitter and then post only pictures on Instagram. You can do it the other way. You could have...
Absolutely.
Saying, have you seen some Instagram channels? Oh, they just have quotes on it, some motivational quotes, because they picked up some information somewhere and they do just fine because the audience have followed that person. And in fact, I noticed something, and I wanted to because it was like research for this chat. Okay, it was my research. A lot of people who start off in the bottom and they do reasonably well, let's say they get to a medium point, are very consistent in what they're doing, meaning if it's for photos on Instagram, it's photos only, but it's the certain type of photo only as well. It's not a varied image. Even the color grading on the image looks the same on every photo. Like a person does black and white, it's just black and white photos. And if it's black and white, they go even further, they niche down, and it's just black and white, and it's landscapes. Black and white landscape, old buildings, you know. Then I see celebrities who are famous because they have a community outside of social media. They're famous because they're known for their movies or their film, their TV shows, their music, what have you. And I noticed this. They post whatever random nonsense that happens around them. It is so chaotic. The post from Rihanna, check it out. post from some of the musicians as well, the actors. Look at The Rock, Dwayne Johnson's posts. So totally random. It's just whatever he wants to talk about. And they are very popular.
Absolutely.
And they, amazing engagement. Because people like the guy. The people like these people and they follow it. And that's why if you can focus on your community building, you can defeat, quote unquote, defeat the algorithm and just focus on the community. Or you can work towards using the algorithm to your advantage and by being consistent with the content that you create. But you've got to choose which path you're in and choose wisely.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
So yeah, I like what you said there because it talks to community and it talks to building a community. It talks to something that I spoke to a couple of people about on the show. And one of the people I spoke to recently about this was Seth Godin, who talks about building a community and focusing on being consistent, which is precisely what you've just said. It's not about being platform agnostic necessarily, but it's about being consistent. And yet, of course, with you being a content creator who is largely on social media or utilizes social media as part of the process to releasing and creating content, you seem to rely less on a blog now than you did when you started You Baby and I. It's more social media. How do you then keep a good, I guess, how do you keep a good profile of or portfolio of your work outside of, say, an Instagram where it's organized and you can and it's live on, I suppose, on the internet? How do you maintain that when you rely so much in some instances on some of these social networks?
The key is, again, this is Gary Vee as well. He mentioned it. If you make content that you like instead of what the algorithm expects you to do or whatever the trendy content is now, you know, if you see what TikTok expects you to do or what Instagram is now expecting you to do, if you just create content that you enjoy and share a message of what you want in life, like what do you want in life? Do you like food? Talk about food, write about food, take pictures of food, travel and eat lots of food. Travel with people you like, eat that food. Then go to other countries, eat that food, talk to the people in different countries, in different languages, and ask them, what do you call this in your language? There are so many things you could do with food, right? And you can have so much of content in different platforms and formats. You could do an audio podcast just on food. You could have someone, have you seen those ASMR videos where you can hear someone eating the food in a nice sort of sexy kind of way, and you hear that audio of them chewing the food. And I know you look grossed out, but there's such a market for that. You know, there's such a market
I'm
for
sure,
that.
I'm sure.
I mean, I saw this ASMR, and it's so unique because people are finding unique ways to do content that is so innovative that it does well because it's so unique. And that's the consistency. Consistency is not doing the same thing over and over again. It's the consistency around, in this example, food. You could have an ASMR channel, you could do a podcast, you could do a video, you could do photos, you can go on Pinterest, you can do it on Instagram, you can do Reels, TikTok, you name it. But you're talking about food because you're the food guy. And that's the consistency. Consistency shouldn't be only images of food everywhere, sharing food on Twitter only, sharing your images on TikTok. It doesn't work. What works is the consistency of your message, but then trying different things out there. In fact, ASMR, you know ASMR, right? Like the weird things that are on YouTube where it's these very high quality mics. They get real close and they go like really sexy. Hey, Mongezi, can you hear my voice? Do I sound like Barry White or not? You know? And they like get right in there, crumbling whatever, doing whatever. And apparently people fall asleep to it because it soothes them, it helps them with depression, and it makes a lot of money for these people because it's an amazing content. And I knew this because content works on the kind of audience out there, and we assume, and this happened to me a lot, we assume people like what we like and people don't like what you don't like. People assume that if this is good for me, maybe other people might not like it either. It also works the other way. So you don't create that content. Because you think, who is going to listen to me sing? Or who is going to see my pictures? These are just, they're just my photos. Until you actually put it out there and be courageous with your content, you might be surprised at what the people might like. Have you read 50 Shades of Grey, Mr. Mongezi?
I haven't. I'm not part of the community that has, but I know that it became a sensational bestseller that also had a movie created around it. In fact, speaking of niche content and people making money out of it, at what point did things turn for you when you started monetizing your content? Because there was a time when you didn't, and then you started monetizing this content, right? And not just monetizing it through partnering with brands, but also monetizing it by getting paid by some of these channels. When you got to that point, did that start making it viable or not? Is it already at a point where you feel like the content you create is worth being on the platforms that kind of enable you to monetize that platform? Because some content creators are at that point and others aren't. But at where's that point for you?
I think the best analogy I can give you is McDonald's. McDonald's sells burgers. They make money selling their burgers. They go in day in and day out, people that is, to buy their burgers. You might like it, you might not like it, but there's a business for people who need fast food. But do you know where McDonald's really make their money?
It's the real estate, isn't it?
Yes. Real estate. That is what content creation should be like. You create your content, but you shouldn't expect to make money from the content itself. Even though it will pay the bills and, you know, you will get the basics, it'll get your clout going, it will get you to grow, whatever you need to do. But your business is what that content can extend to. The innovation is around the content that you have, the audience that follows it. What is the intersection of the content, the audience, and other similar values and things that the audience likes? So if you're into food, we spoke about food, right? And you like to travel. What is the intersection of food and travel that you can monetize that might not be related to food? What about because of your love of food and the fact that you want food fast, you're the guy who ended up creating a food delivery company, and you use your clout, your social media clout, to get people to sign up on an app where people can also order food that they like. And the money then starts to come from that. The wealth, your creation is coming from that product because you used your social media clout to get people to use it. So what you're doing with content now, is you're building your community first.
Right.
Product. The now, monetization comes afterwards.
Yeah. Now for you, did you find that intersection up front, and what was it? Or did it come up for you because of the kind of content you're creating? Was it by happenstance, or was it intentional from the beginning?
Happenstance. I was just experimenting, trying out different things. Obviously, I was doing things within the framework of what I liked, like the photography, food experiences, travel, what have you. But I wasn't intentionally trying to monetize. Like, I'm doing this just so I can get that. I'm doing this so I can get free shoes from Nike or whatever, you know. I did it because I enjoyed it. It was content that I wish existed, because that's what you do. You create something that you wish that existed in the world. That's what your content should be. Then you connect with the people that connect with the things that you wish that existed with the world. So right. It was all happenstance. It's all serendipity. Okay. I had no intention of doing it until much later, because mom says wasn't the intention. I had no intention. It happened because of, think about this. We were doing reviews and blogs. Families were telling us what they were thinking about the products. We would publish it. We would then receive products coming to our door. We didn't know what to do with it because some of the products were being irrelevant and we were growing out of it. What did we do? What if we connect with other people in our network, with a new baby and I, who can review it for us so we can publish it elsewhere and help the company out who sent it to us? Mom Says happened as a result of that. We didn't plan for Mom Says. Mom Says happened because of what we were experiencing as a community in new baby and I. And then more things could happen. After Mom Says, we experience what Mom Says is going through. We realize we can do something else. And that grows. And it grows. And then next thing you know, you build something. Yeah. That's where the monetization is really coming from.
In closing, Vijay, here's a two-pronged question.
Sure.
On the one side, what would your suggestion, advice be to brands collaborating with content creators about what they expect in terms of the content that they want, right? How should brands approach collaborations with content creators in terms of the expectations that they put on those content creators? And on the other side, what should people getting into content creation or who are content creators do to position themselves?
This is what content creators must, how content creators must position themselves. That's your second question?
Yeah. So it's like, how should I, as a content creator, work towards positioning myself? What should I be doing to help differentiate myself, put myself out there, be in a space where I'm creating the kind of content that I love and brands or somebody out there is willing to put money on the table for me to collaborate with them?
Cool. Let's start with the first question. What can brands do?
Yeah.
Very often, brand agencies that work with the company have amazing, talented, creative people who understand how they can sell their product. Amazing agencies. But the problem is politics gets involved because corporates have executives who think in money. So they end up dictating what the brands end up doing. So we actually saw that all the time. So I have sympathy with the brand agencies that I worked with. They had great intentions of building what the companies needed, but they would go another direction because of corporate interference. That is a bigger problem than worrying about the influencer, because once they sort that out, they sort out the message of what they want to do and accept that if brands want to collaborate, if you want people who use your products to sell, help you sell, let them do it. Don't tell them what to say. Do you know how many times we receive a brief and say, when you create this video, please say these words? I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Why are you working with us? Why don't you just hire an actor and just do an ad? If you're working with us, we are going to say it the way we are going to say it so that we can help you sell, but then we are going to talk to our community the way they know us. All our community is going to know that we are being fake by simply reading out what you are asking us to say. The content never does well. We show them the proof. See, this is what happens. But then we know what happens. They say, you see, we can't work with these guys because the content didn't do well. But I explained to you why. So that's a very important thing. Brands need to understand that if you're working with an influencer, if you want to work with the community, let the community talk. Let them decide, use that feedback, and then use it for marketing. I've seen amazing results from small companies who are listening, and they are doing fantastically well. Community storytelling. This is what this is. Let them do the talking, okay? That's the first question. Second question, how can influencers position themselves? First of all, influencers, or any content creator, I should say, you have to ask the question, what is your ethos in life? What is your motto in life? Okay, because I had a guy come to me and say, I want to sell my book. You help me sell my book. Can you help me start a podcast? And I said, why? Why do you want to start a podcast? How do you even know that's going to work? Your ethos, the way you come across, you don't even speak that much. The podcast is not going to work for you. Understand why you do what you do, and then connect the dots to the kind of content that meets it. Because what if you're a great actor? What if you are a great musician? Use music. Don't go and look at the trends and say, but the trends say we should be doing TikTok and then be doing photos. No. You're a musician. Sell your music. Sing to the world. Let them hear you sing. That's what it should be. So positioning yourself needs to happen so that you are happy and are courageous enough to come forward and show what you are made of. Bring your personality into your content and then try out one or two platforms first that align with your ethos. So let's say, for example, Mangezi, you want to do food content, okay? You want to tell the world about the beauty of food and the people and the culture of South Africa. What would you do first?
I guess in my case, I'd probably just talk about the food, or at least talk about the experience of the food itself. Find a way of creating a platform that enables the food to be experienced through me by the community.
Yes, you don't need to get an expensive camera. You don't need a video camera or a crew to show the food. You could have a conversation around the food. You could have your smartphone. I think I saw it once with someone doing that. They would talk to their family about family values around the food. Episode one was, what do you think about marriage in the community? And the father and the grandfather are talking while they're having a meal. They didn't even mention the food, but the food was discussed because people start to ask, hey, what is your grandfather eating? What's your uncle eating? That looks amazing. And then the food discussions began. That is what I mean by ethos intersecting with the content. That's very important. If you are a photographer who loves photography, you can start with pictures because you're showing your intersection of food and photography. Different kind of content, but it meets your personality because you love photography, right? That's an amazing thing. If you're a voiceover artist, someone who has been on radio, do you think food would work audio only?
Absolutely, because then you know how to use your voice. And I think radio has been referred to a lot as a theater of the mind. So you actually create a theater of the mind through food. So absolutely.
Even more, we spoke about ASMR. We had food, ASMR intersecting, and guess what they're doing? They're eating the food and you hear the sound effects of the food. And that is an audience in itself. It's unique, it's different, and it works. So now we spoke about three different variations of content that you can do about food, depending on the personalities and who you are and how you connect with your community. And that's the whole point. Mm. So to stand out, it's very important to understand what your intersections are, and what you like to do and who you are. And just bring your personality and don't be afraid to experiment. Yeah. Experiment.
Yeah.
If do lots of food with photos, then try with video, then try with your mobile phone, then try podcasting, then try whatever you like. See what works. As long as you enjoy food, people will come.
I think the one word that I get out of that is authenticity. That be authentic in whatever it is. Do something that's authentic to you in the kind of content you create, and also on the brand side. Let the community that your community or individual that you collaborate with be authentic in the way that they create the content and talk about your brand. Vijay, I think, that is, we spoke about a lot, and I'm glad we did actually, because it gives me a better sense of your ethos and your thinking and your approach to content creation.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.